Blog Talk Radio.
Is your business protected against the threat of malicious litigation and frivolous lawsuits? Are you sinking company profits into marketing campaigns that do nothing to contribute to the growth of your business? Bottled Business Sense provides practical business perspectives that uniquely emphasize both legal and media marketing strategies to protect and ensure the longevity of your business. Now, whether you're trying to provide a startup business with some level of stability, or an established business with foolproof asset and estate protection, or simply attempting to get a better return for your business marketing dollars, Bill Bernard and Rick Muscoso will expose potential pitfalls to ensure the security and growth of your business, free from unwanted expense and the threat of litigation. You'll learn how to implement marketing and protection tools equal to those used by today's most successful corporations. Let's join Bill and Rick for today's Bottled Business Sense Show.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Tuesday here at 10 a.m. on the Bottled Business Sense Show. I want to welcome all of our viewers and listeners out there to the show. We are a best practices simulcast, where Bill and I both talk about legal topics as it pertains to your business, as well as best practices for marketing and various topics along that line. And we welcome you to submit feedback via our social media feeds, as well as if you are interested in being a guest on the show, go ahead and drop us a line at bottledbusinesssenseshow@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Love to have you participate on the show with a topic maybe that you're interested in. So drop us a line, and we'd love to hear from you. So with that being said, I want to welcome everyone and welcome my co-host, Bill Bernard, who's on the other side with a very interesting topic that we have for today.
Yes. Good morning, Rick. Glad to be here with everyone again. You know, we are because of the strain on our business. It's a good strain. It means our businesses are alive and well and prospering. And because of all of that and our time constraints, we are accordingly making the Bottled Business Show a twice a month program now instead of every week. It'll go toward the end of the month as well. So just check the internet and our site, bottledbusinesssenseshow.com. You'll be able to see all of the postings that advertise when our show will be aired. And, you know, we try to make this show interesting, but more importantly, practical for our business owners and entrepreneurs who need to make sure their business is prosperous, and it's going to be prosperous if it's safe and well protected and moving along at an even pace. So these are tips in the areas of general business, forming business entities, other general business topics about employment for our entrepreneurs who are expanding and hiring employees, as well as estate planning issues, all coming together to help the business owner in the operation of his or her business on a daily basis. With that said, today's topic is an interesting one from my perspective, and I chose it because we recently had an incident where my wife's father died, and he has a house in Las Vegas, and we're going to sell the house. But prior to that, he was ill for quite a period of time, and had a power of attorney in operation, and a lot of financial institutions had some issues with the power of attorney. It was formulated by a Nevada lawyer, but it's really not the lawyer's problem or fault, because the institutions sometimes are very particular about how these powers of attorney are formulated. So I want to talk about what happens when third parties refuse to honor a perfectly acceptable power of attorney, one that's legally formed. And, you know, you really have to understand this from the perspective of agents who act under a power of attorney, frustrated by banks, brokerages, title companies, anybody who might refuse to accept a duly executed, meaning a perfectly legal power of attorney. This frustrates the individual who's the agent for the owner of the assets, because this agent owner is incapacitated, or because the owner just simply says, hey, I want you to handle my finances. That agent can be frustrated many times as a result of these institutions that get to be pretty picky about the power of attorney that the attorney formulated. So here's kind of what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to lead off by telling you some of the reasons that powers of attorney might be refused by various financial institutions. And there's a couple of them, two or three of them, actually. One is it contains unfamiliar language. And this is important because different attorneys have different languages, phraseology that they use to formulate a power of attorney. And in the end, it might all mean the same thing, but these banks and institutions are looking at these things on a regular basis and don't always see the same specific language. And so therefore they get a little, in addition to that, a power of attorney might be executed by the owner of the assets with his or her agent, and it might be 5 years old or more. And typically at a five-year point, institutions get a little nervous. There's no reason for that. Absolutely no reason for it, because if you read the power of attorney, if it's formulated correctly, it'll tell you when it's supposed to expire, if at all. And nevertheless, institutions get a little uptight about that. And then the third reason that I find that causes these issues is that it's not on the form that the bank's power of attorney instituted. In other words, banks have their lawyers formulate powers of attorney, and oftentimes they like you to use those. Well, you're not going to necessarily go into a bank and say, I want to use your power of attorney when you're having a trust estate plan that has trusts and powers of attorney drawn up by your own lawyer. So this can cause these things can cause problems for people. And I see it happen every day. And I saw it happen to my wife before her dad passed away.
So when you create a power of attorney, isn't this reviewed? It's not necessarily reviewed then by the bank once you do sign the document, right? Or
well,
they don't actually see it until the event.
Well, they don't see it until you have a need to use it. So let's say you have a power of attorney and it's supposed to be operative upon the incapacitation of the owner of the assets. He or she may not become incapacitated for maybe 5, 10, 20 years after you execute the power of attorney. So you don't have any reason to show it to anybody because you're not stepping into the shoes of the owner of the assets until he or she has that issue. So, yes, you would not go and typically show it to everybody just for the sake of showing it to anybody. And it is a document that's private until the time comes that you need to use it. But they get worried, Rick, because of these issues that I just mentioned, and there's really no need for it. So you say to yourself, why? Banks are uncomfortable with their branch deciding whether the power of attorney is valid and whether the agent is acting within his or her legal authority. They get upset about this. They get nervous, despite the fact that it's drawn up properly. So basically, how do you resolve this? Foreseeable problems with banks are less likely to occur sometimes when you use what is called a uniform statutory power of attorney. California has such a document. If you want to use that document, you can use that document, and sometimes it's more widely accepted. Also, a California statutory special durable power of attorney for bank accounts and certificate of deposits exists. So you can use that specific power of attorney that banks have that is even more specific than the general uniform statutory power of attorney. Or you can simply go in and say, let me have one of your powers of attorney that your lawyer's drawn up and redo it. I think this is an invasion of someone's rights, and it's an abrogation of someone's right to be able to have their lawyer draw up a power of attorney. In the end, it may save you some time, effort, and even money by not having to fight with these people. But I think if you do it the right way, and you cover all the bases, you can force the issue. It's just really how far you want to go. Now, I'm not saying you're going to have a problem with every single banking institution or title company or whatever it might be, but you can do something like the following. You can take a power of attorney and present with it an affidavit to the effect that it's still valid, and induce the reliance by the bank and others. If it refuses to honor that power of attorney, you can then say, we're going to sue for the enforcement of that power of attorney and recover our costs for having to sue you. You can actually go that far. Now, do people
When would the affidavit then be presented?
You would do the affidavit at the time you have to invoke the power of attorney. So you would show the bank the power of attorney along with an affidavit that you now have drawn up under the presumption that you're going to have to be going into the institution. You draw up the affidavit that says it's still valid, that it's perfectly legal pursuant to California law or whatever state you might be in. And you have it executed by your lawyer. And induce their reliance on this power of attorney by presenting it in that manner. And if then they give you some issues, say, look, I paid a lot of good money for this power of attorney. Another one, or if I have to go through this hassle, I'm going to try to recover from you what I have to pay the lawyer. And whatever time and effort is going to go by, which causes me to you may lose all kinds of things. I mean, without your ability to control these assets for the owner, penalties, fees, you may have who knows what could be invoked by other asset companies that you're dealing with as a result of your inability to act as the agent for, under the power of attorney. So it just depends. Some people just say, hey, okay, I'm going to take my money elsewhere. But of course, if the owner's incapacitated, you're stuck with the money where it is until you can get the power of attorney in operation. So I typically form a power of attorney that is very specific according to the language of the state that the assets are in, where you're going to have to use it. And then I typically have the person go in with an affidavit stating that it is still valid. And many times that gets around any issue that the bank might have. In fact, I even tell people to go in with the power of attorney. And then if you get an issue with the bank, find out what the specific reasons are, have the lawyer then write a letter to the bank or have a lawyer do an affidavit, depending upon whatever issues the bank points out. Sometimes it can be cured just with a letter from the lawyer.
Your case with your wife's father passing, what are your choices to do in that situation?
Well, I don't want to get too detailed into my wife's personal issues with her dad, but I can say this, that, this is like the Senate Judiciary Committee, Rick. We can't say everything that's being discussed, but I would tell you that, there was some, thing with the banking accounts and transferring money from one account to another, because her name wasn't on the account and she had to deal with the account as the agent for the owner, who's my father-in-law, who was incapacitated at the time prior to his death. So those are the typical kind of issues you run into where you're just, you're not doing anything of a miraculous nature necessarily. You're just trying to move assets around. And of course the bank gets worried that they may be sued if this power of attorney isn't in accordance with their standards, but they have to remember it's not their standards necessarily that come into play. It is the standards of the legal standards have to be met. If the power of attorney is valid, it's valid. You have to then convince the bank to honor it. Why do banks give you a hard time sometimes? Well, think about it this way. It's like getting a loan modification. They know that people trying to get loan modifications have a hard time suing because people who need loan modifications are having a difficult time paying their mortgage, let alone paying an attorney to do a loan modification. They figure if you want to sue us, where are you going to get the money to sue us? So they willingly many times violate the law intentionally, knowing that the homeowner is in that position. That's an extreme example. But my point is, you go into a bank, what are they going to say? What, oh, you're going to sue us over this power of attorney? Well, it just depends on how far you want to take it, what kind of finances you have to be able to spend on that, how angry you are at the bank, how much assets are at stake, how what penalties or fees or what financial difficulties the owner may suffer as a result of your inability to exercise that power of attorney. Those things come into play. But you're hopeful that the way to resolve it is to be able to get a letter from the lawyer or an affidavit in conjunction with the power of attorney if, in fact, you do experience any problems with these institutions.
So in your experience, is that all it would take then to resolve this situation?
Typically it is. Typically it is. You also have issues with title companies. Do they refuse to accept powers of attorney offered to transfer title to real property when the powers of attorney do not refer to the real property and incorporate its legal description? Now, that's more of an issue with the lawyer. You need to be able to – that's a specific kind of power of attorney that deals with the transfer of real property with an owner's assets and moving things around. You better have a legal description in there. And the five-year period seems to be a mark that banks get concerned with, so you could solve that by way of an affidavit saying that the power of attorney is still valid. If you're not narrowly tailoring the power of attorney to the transfer of the real property, maybe you've got the real property issue involved in there, but you've also got it in dealing with a number of different asset issues. You want to try to tailor powers of attorney dealing with the transfer of real property specifically to that real property. That's the best way to do it. And you can also record that power of attorney in the county where the property is located. I don't advocate ever filing powers of attorney for general asset control. But when you're dealing with a power of attorney specifically for the transfer of real property and only the transfer of real property, it doesn't hurt to go ahead and record that, because with that official stamp on there, the banks are going to be much, they're going to be much more comfortable with that. So these are all issues that come up and, kind of tick people off, and I understand why.
Yeah. Do you recommend updating the power of attorney every 5 years just to stay ahead of this problem?
Well, you could do that, but I would say why do that? Just wait till you have to use it, because you may not have a problem with the bank. And if you have a problem with the bank, then you do the letter or the affidavit at that time. Why update it every 5 years? In other words, you're going to have to spend money to update it. Why not just wait to see if you need to? And then if you do it by way of an affidavit.
Yeah. So you really won't know. You really won't know what you need to do until it happens, right?
Until you test it, right.
Yeah.
So these are things that I think people need to be aware of. And I guess, people always generally ask me the question, how can a person safeguard against their agent being unable to manage their assets and finances during a period of incapacity? Well, I think we just basically discussed that. But there's one other big issue that you can do. You can have, with your powers of attorney, and you should have a living trust done. The living trust will also specify different things that a trustee can do under the terms of that trust. And if someone becomes incapacitated, and you generally state trust that incapacitation would be a reason to allow a successor trustee to step into the place of the originator of the trust, who many times is both the creator of the trust, the trustor, as well as the trustee, then you can become the trustee temporarily and use the trust as a vehicle to also control the assets and manage the assets. Banks, mortgage companies, title companies may still then ask to see, this is your power. Do we need to see the trust? Remember, the trust is a private document. No, you have a trust certification, which is another document that comprises the trust package that allows you to have a one- or two-page document with the signatures attached saying there is a trust, there is a trustee, a successor trustee, upon incapacitation of the current trustee. You then step in, you show them the certificate of trust, And you attach to it the powers that you've been granted under that trust, and that can allow you to also control the assets of the individual should you have some issue with incapacitation during the course of his or her lifetime.
Now, I remember in a previous episode that we did when we were talking about trusts and living trusts, aren't there some financial institutions that request or that mandate to see the trust?
Yeah, and sure. And then you have to make it the same decision. Do you write a letter from the attorney? Do you dispute it? Do you just give them the trust? The trust is a private document. It's not required to be shown to anyone. That's what the trust certification is for. It's a two-page document that says there's a trust and that you have the power to operate under the trust. Hassle, and the bank's lawyers want to see the entirety of the trust, and you have to make a decision as to whether or not you want to allow that or whether you want to fight it. It just depends on many times on principle, sometimes on desires or wishes of the individual involved. The individual may say while he or she is still capacitated, while they still have capacity, I should say, they may say, okay, if at some point in time I become incapacitated and the institution wants to see the trust, I'm fine with that. So, you know, I don't want to give the impression to our listeners and viewers that this is a problem that you have more often than not. But it does rear its ugly head from time to time, and I think you need to know what to do to alleviate that and how you might get around some of these problems from the get-go. And I think that begs the question of a business lawyer available so you can have somebody to turn to when a number of different issues in your business arise, and one of them might be a power of attorney, because that power of attorney for assets is going to carry with it the ability to operate that entrepreneur's business should that entrepreneur either desire not to operate the business but rather have you do it, or should the entrepreneur become incapacitated for some reason.
Yeah. Well, so we all hope that you come to a quick resolution with this, and that somebody as sharp as you, I'm sure it will. Folks, if you find yourself in a situation where you do need a power of attorney and done accurately and done in your best interest, then Bill's the person to call and find out more information. So with that, why don't you share your contact information so people can reach out to you?
Yeah, it's the phone numbers are both 949 area code, and the office phone is 698-6222, and the private line is 413-6535. My email is bill@wfblegalconsulting.com. And you can go to the website, wfblegalconsulting.com, or you can go to protectyourestate365.com. And in fact, that second site has talks about powers of attorney and has questions that relate to it, so you can learn a little bit about it. So,
yeah. Why feel free to just for our viewers, this is one of the first episodes that you are with us on, Bill, share a little bit of information on that site, because it's a very intriguing, very powerful tool that people can use to protect their estate.
Yeah, it basically allows you to formulate what I call a trust package, and on the site it has all the documentation you get with a trust package. So that would be, in addition to the trust, all of your powers of attorney for assets, powers of attorney for health care, otherwise referred to as a health directive or living will. It has all of your private HIPAA forms that allows the release of medical information should you become incapacitated. It has the trust certification, the declaration of trust, the pour over will. All of these documents, which is a massive amount of, it's like a little paperback, but an 8.5 by 11 form. It has all the documentation you would need to operate your estate, including prior to death, which is where powers of attorney come into play. Because remember, powers of attorney operate prior to death. The trust comes into play and operates generally post-death. And there are videos that we have on the site, probably about 10 or 11 videos, that specifically answer all different questions about various various issues that arise with an estate plan. It also has a question and answer page where you can just click on a question and a little drop-down box will give you a 2 or 3 or 4 line answer. A real educational learning experience that allows you to get a trust package for a tremendously affordable rate. Nobody's going to beat this because no attorney is going to personally tailor your estate to the way I do it, quite candidly, not LegalZoom, not any of these crazy sites that just put you in touch with somebody who fills out forms for you. Nobody's going to be able to do it quite this way. I must say, it's kind of a revolutionary site. So if you need to get an estate plan at a really great price, then go there. And you can fill out the forms online, the preliminary forms that I need for information to comprise your trust package. And then that you click on that and it goes right to me. You don't I get your email and I get your contact information and away we go. Of course, the site doesn't work for very intricate estates, very large estates, or for irrevocable trusts. I'm talking about revocable trusts that basically have an average estate for the everyday middle class individual. And those are the people I'm trying to help with this site. If you have a bigger estate that involves a lot more complex issues, then of course you should sit and meet with your lawyer and discuss those issues with him or her.
Right. Yeah, I know, Bill, in helping you planning with this or creating the website, I know one of your goals was to really just offer this to families that maybe were not even considering something like this, and making it easy to digest, easy to understand, easy to implement with your expertise. And so it's an awesome package. It's an awesome site to learn from. So folks out there, if you are interested, check out protectyourestate365.com or PYE365.com. And for those of you who are looking for help in regards to your business or estate planning, please reach out to Bill. He's one of the best here.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate that. And yeah, I'll look forward to helping anybody who even just has some questions. You want to ask some questions, give me a call, type your name in the site, do whatever it is you need to do. And I'm happy to help somebody. I don't nickel and dime people with phone calls if they're trying to get some information and some clarity for what they want to do with their estate plan. So having said all of that, we will be back, right, Rick, in 2 weeks, and we're going to talk about the distribution agreements, which I think are important because we're going to be discussing how businesses use distributors to market their products and services, and what you need to look for, how it operates from a distributor standpoint, as well as the owner of the business's standpoint, because these are great ways to be able to get your stuff out there at a cost-effective way. But there are things that both parties need to be aware of in so doing. So this is becoming more and more prevalent in people's businesses. So I'll look forward to discussing that when we come back in a couple weeks, Rick.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Bill, for your topic today. That was great. And folks, join us on March 28th for the next topic on how
distribution agreements.
Yeah, distribution agreements. That's what I was going to say. How your business should be distributed. So everyone have a great, prosperous week. We will see you in a couple of weeks. Thanks, Bill. And everyone have a great day.
Okay. Take care, everybody.